Welcome to the Locked On Jets podcast for Wednesday, October 6th, 2021. I'm your host, John B. from GangreneNation.com, thanking you for making this podcast your first listen each day. Today on the show, we have our weekly mailbag.
You are Locked On Jets, your daily New York Jets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Thanks to everybody who sent in questions. We have a weekly mailbag show each Wednesday with listener questions. Let's get going. Our first question: would it make sense for Mike LaFleur to go back into the booth rather than be on the sidelines during games? I get that it's good for him to have that interpersonal relationship with Wilson, but at the same time, perhaps the press box could give him more space to stay composed, see the entire field, and pivot as needed. It's an interesting question, and I think it's a very difficult one to answer because we've only had four games so far, and we also have not seen what LaFleur coaching in the press box would be like. And if you're not familiar with this, some offensive coordinators are on the field as they call plays, whereas others are up in the press box during games, and each of them has certain advantages and certain disadvantages. When you're on the field, you can interact more with the players, and I think that's probably the biggest reason LaFleur is on the field right now, especially with a rookie quarterback. You can communicate with players, but you're doing it on the phone. It's not as personal. The chats tend to be more brief when you're up in the press box because, again, you're chatting over the phone, over the communication system, so it's easier to talk to the players. It's easier to understand what they're seeing out there, what they're feeling, what they're comfortable running. In the press box, obviously, you have a better view of what's happening on the field. You get the all 22 view. You know, when you're on the sideline, you have everything in front of you. You can't really see the entire field. So the advantage to being in the booth is that you have a better sense of where everybody is, what's working, what's not working during a given play. And it's also a quieter environment. If you're the type of coordinator who likes to be able to think through things, it's obviously going to be quieter in the press box. It's a controlled environment. You don't have all this craziness happening around you. You don't have guys moving around you. The crowd noise is blocked out a little bit more. My sense is that LaFleur is probably on the field because Zach Wilson's a rookie quarterback, and he wants to be able to communicate with him at all times when he's not on the field. You know, here's the thing, though, and I think this is something that kind of gets lost in this debate. The Jets do have coaches up in the booth. So if your coordinator is on the sidelines, then usually what happens is like a couple of position coaches who otherwise would be on the field, they go up to the booth and they kind of chart things. They check out tendencies. They're marking down personnel groupings. So it's not like the Jets lack a presence in the booth. It's all about how you deploy your coaches. Now, if LaFleur is in the booth, I'm sure some position coaches will move back to the field so that they can help coach guys up. So in some ways, it's almost an overrated argument. And I do feel like, to some extent, people look at certain elements of what's happening with the team, and when things are going well, they assume it's got to be because of that. If it's going poorly, they assume it's got to be because of that. Remember that game last year when Dowell Loggins took over the play calling for Adam Gase and the Jets had a good first half? And everybody assumed that must mean Loggins is a much better play caller than Gase. Well, that wasn't really true. Loggins calling plays was probably not the reason the Jets had a good first half offensively. Just because thing A happens along with thing B, that doesn't mean thing A is caused by thing B. So I don't know. I think it's difficult to say. I think LaFleur is still early enough in his career that it's not clear what works best for him. I'm not sure I'd necessarily move him back into the booth at this point, because again, you do have coaches in the booth doing the job that LaFleur would do if he was in the booth. And I think that having that direct access to your quarterback, you know, he throws an interception, you can go back to the sidelines and not only kind of talk through it, you can understand what he was seeing in a way that maybe is not as easy to communicate if you're in the booth. So my hunch is that I'd keep LaFleur on the field, but my bigger hunch is that I don't think it matters as much as people make it out to matter. Our next question: in your opinion, was Mims' role made irrelevant by the free agent additions, or was Mims role made it irrelevant once this coaching staff evaluated the wide receiver talents during training camp. Either way, why not move Mims at either point? Why have him as a healthy scratch? He doesn't add value. It seems like this is more personal by either Saleh or somebody else on the coaching staff than anything else. I wonder how Joe Douglas feels about this, especially since he traded back and still wound up with his guy. I think you got it right. It definitely seems like a personal thing with this coaching staff and Mims. I don't know what's going on there, and it's a little tricky because sometimes when the player and coach don't get along, it's the player's fault. The player's doing something that the coaches should not like. And other times, it's the coach's fault. The Adam Gase experience. I mean, pretty much every conflict Adam Gase had with a player was his fault. And sometimes there's fault on both sides. So without knowing the specifics, and we don't really know a whole lot about what's going on with Mims, even the reports we've gotten of what's been going on within the organization leaves a lot of room for interpretation. So I don't know. I do think that maybe the fan base is a little bit too sold on Mims, and it's tough for me to say that because I really like Denzel Mims. I think he's got a lot of potential. I loved it when the Jets got him in the 2020 draft in the second round. But even though I think his rookie season was pretty solid in context, you know, about 40 yards per game, which is roughly in line with what a lot of successful receivers have, 40 yards per game over half a season does not guarantee you that you're going to be a great player in the NFL. So, you know, I don't know. I think we need to wait and see more. And unfortunately, we may not have a definitive answer until Mims goes to another team. And the second part of that question is something I absolutely agree with. If the Jets aren't going to use Denzel Mims, I don't see what he's doing on this roster, because I'd have to imagine you can get something in return for him. He was a second-round pick last year. Now, you're not going to get a second-round pick in return, but there has to be some team out there that had him rated highly on their draft board in 2020 and would be willing to give up something of value for him. It's not just that Mims is a backup. You know, it would be one thing if, all right, well, we added Corey Davis. We added Elijah Moore. Even we added Keelan Cole, who's a professional receiver. Okay, so Mims is a backup. But even when guys are hurt, Mims can't get into the lineup. I mean, Jeff Smith is playing over him. Braxton Berrios is playing over him. If he can't get onto the field when guys are hurt, when the Jets are shorthanded, then he's really not doing this team any good. And they really ought to look to trade him. And I hate to say that, because I would like to see what Mims can do in a Jets uniform, but if the coaching staff is so adamant about not playing him and he's buried on the depth chart behind these guys who are not good professional football players, then what purpose is he serving? Because if he's inactive on game day, or if he's active and only playing a handful of snaps when guys are hurt, that's not going to help his trade value, because the rest of the NFL is going to look at this and say, well, he must not be very good if he can't play over these guys. So, you know, if they're not going to play Denzel Mims, if they don't believe in him, then I think they should look to move on. Now, I hate to say that because I don't like giving up on a guy before he's failed, but if the coaching staff is so adamant about not playing him, that's a direction I think they're going to have to look at. Well, hopefully Denzel Mims can get his career moving, and as you know, to get your car moving, you got to put gasoline in it. And I want to tell you about an incredible app everybody who buys gas needs to know about. My listeners are making up to 25 cents for every gallon of gas every time they sign up. All you have to do is download the free Get Upside app in the App Store or Google Play right now. Use promo code Touchdown and get a bonus 25 cents per gallon on your first fill up. That's 50 cents cash back. Don't pay full price at the pump anymore. Get cash back using Get Upside. Just download the app for free and use promo code Touchdown to get up to 50 cents per gallon cash back on your first tank. Some people who drive a lot are making as much as $200 or $300 a month in cash back, and there's no catch. The cash back gets added right to your account. You can cash out anytime to your bank account, PayPal, or an e-gift card for Amazon and other brands. Just download the free Get Upside app and use promo code Touchdown. Thank you again for making Locked On Jets your first listen each day as we continue our Wednesday mailbag show. Our next question: after four games, I have yet to figure out what LaFleur is trying to accomplish with Wilson, which leads me to think he hasn't yet figured Wilson out. Wilson's best plays have come off schedule, so shouldn't his play calling reflect this, designing the types of plays that can get Wilson on the move and have successful off-schedule plays? And I think the answer to that is yes. Now, the first couple of weeks of the season, they did try and get Wilson on the move, and it frequently was not working out very well. One thing I noticed against Denver is they kind of got rid of those play calls. You know, looking back on it, it was a very conservative game plan they had against the Denver Broncos. Their longest drive of the game, they didn't even score points. I mean, they were averaging like 2 or 3 plays a yard on that drive, and that was their most successful drive of the game, but it lasted over 10 plays. Against Tennessee, Wilson made a number of plays that were off schedule, and a couple of them were indeed plays where they got him on the move. The Corey Davis touchdown was a bootleg, and Wilson kind of turned that into a schoolyard football play because he pointed and told Davis to break his route when he noticed something in the defense. There was another big play, a pass interference that gained 43 yards, that was another kind of bootleg rollout type of play. And it did not look like Davis broke his route to me. He essentially was beginning to go to the sideline, then he broke up the field. He kind of reversed direction and broke up the field, and I thought that was actually part of the design, like they were trying to fake them out. Anyway, the play worked really well as Davis drew a pass interference penalty. So yes, I do think that the Jets should try and get Wilson on the move more, because that creates the potential for these off-schedule plays. Now, you're not going to draw up many plays like the Wilson pass to Jamison Crowder, where they fumbled the snap and then the Titans defense got out of position because they were going for the ball. I don't think you can draw up many plays like that. I mean, one of the things about this question, though, is that we're talking about plays that are off schedule. Well, the play call is what is the schedule. You know, when you're saying off schedule, you're essentially saying that he did something that wasn't in the play call. So it makes it a little bit difficult to say we should call plays where Wilson's going to make plays off schedule. Tough to do, but there are ways you can increase the odds, like getting him on the move, as we saw with a couple of those big plays that the Jets made. So yeah, I do think LaFleur should try and help him out in that way. But a lot of it's just like Wilson taking advantage of things that he sees after the snap. Our next question. We all know that Gase's first year ended with a great run against mediocre opposition. With the Jets having one of the weakest remaining schedules, it could happen again this year. What are you going to be looking for to tell whether a good finish is genuine progress or a weak schedule papering over cracks? Well, I think no matter what happens, it's going to be a different scenario. Because as much as they wanted to sell us the idea that they were rebuilding in 2019, they were not rebuilding. They had spent a record amount in the offseason. They had one of the oldest rosters in football. And we knew that pretty much all of that team had to be replaced. That was the thing. You could not sell me on progress and then go and say that we need to replace all these parts. That was pretty much the general perception after that season, was the Jets had this 6-2 finish, but even with the 6-2 finish, we saw the team wasn't any good. We needed to replace everybody. It's different this year because you have such a young team, and the Jets actually are rebuilding. They've actually committed to the rebuild this time. So if they're winning games, it's going to be because young players are stepping up, because Jets right now are giving the most snaps of any team in the NFL to rookies. So if they're playing well, it means young players are producing. It doesn't mean that you just have a bunch of veterans who are taking advantage of bad opposition. It means that you have young players who are genuinely improving, who are genuinely performing. So I don't even think you need to look for anything. I think it's just going to be the case that this year, if the team plays better near the finish, even if it's against an easier schedule, there aren't going to be the same doubts, because you're going to know that there are pieces on this roster who are going to be part of the solution going forward. Our next question, if the Jets win in London, do you think they can go on a run with some of the major pieces coming back from injury? If so, do you think Joe Douglas will make any trades to help the team this season? Well, listen, I think sometimes people overestimate how good you have to be to make the playoffs. You can be a very flawed team and make the playoffs. There are 7 teams in each conference that make the postseason each year in the NFL. I think it's tough. I mean, I my guess would still be no. Is it possible? I mean, maybe. Could Joe Douglas make trades to help the Jets this season? I think so. So what I'd say, though, is if Joe Douglas is going to make a trade to help the team in the short term, I don't think he's going to give up a first-round pick. I don't think he's going to give up any of the second-round picks. I think it would be kind of like the deal the Jets made for Shaq Lawson near the end of preseason, where it's something that kind of addresses a need, but you're not giving up a lot to get the player. That's the kind of deal I think Joe Douglas would make. But yeah, if the Jets win against Atlanta, I'm not saying we're talking playoffs, but the Jets are in the mix. You know, they could potentially have a little decent run here. So I don't think you could totally rule it out. And if they're in the mix, then if the opportunity presents itself, and you know, we don't know whether it will or not, but if the opportunity presents itself, they might make a move as long as they're not giving up too much to try and improve the roster in the short term. I think we saw with the loss in trade that Joe Douglas is not totally looking to the future. He's mostly looking to the future, but if he can improve the team right now, he's not going to pass up an opportunity as long as the cost is right. Who knows? Maybe Joe Douglas will have a few late nights around the trade deadline. And if he does, he can have some Built Bars to help fuel him as he looks for ways to improve the Jets roster. Built Bar has 9 delicious flavors. And if you haven't tried all of them yet, you can get a mixed box where you get 2 each of the 9 flavors. And not only are Built Bar flavors the best tasting, but they're healthy too. So go to BuiltBar.com and use promo code LOCKED15. If you do that, you'll get 15% off your first order. Again, it's promo code LOCKED15. It's one word with no space. LOCKED, number 1, number 5, for 15% off at Built Bar. BuiltBar.com. The Jets head to London on Sunday trying to improve their record to 2-3. And if you want to bet on that game or any other game, Bet Online is the number 1 spot for all the pro and college football action this season. With a new updated site and interface and even more odds, props, and contests, Bet Online continues to be the number 1 source for everything football. Head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today to receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. And don't forget to use promo code LOCKEDON to receive your bonus. From football, basketball, boxing, right to your favorite Vegas casino games, don't wait to take advantage of all the amazing offers available for the 2021 season. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your favorite sports. BetOnline, where the game starts. This is a Mailbag Wednesday edition of the Locked On Jets podcast. Our next question: in the first 4 weeks, LaFleur has frequently used 2 tight end sets, even though the Jets' tight ends are not very good. The Jets have several possible approaches for the remainder of the season. They could use fewer tight end sets, they could trade for a tight end, or they could stick to LaFleur's offensive scheme and just plan to add better tight ends in the offseason. Which approach would you prefer? Well, the easiest one is just use fewer tight ends, because wide receiver is a strength of this team. So you take a tight end off and you add in a wide receiver. That seems pretty simple to me. And then in the offseason, look, if LaFleur wants to use multiple tight end sets more frequently, then you go and improve the tight end position. It's very confusing to me why the Jets did so little at tight end and so much at wide receiver this offseason if the offense was going to run this many tight ends. It's very confusing to me. I don't understand why they did it. Now, listen, if an opportunity presents itself to make a deal for a tight end, then take it. But I don't think you can ever count on your ability to make a trade. Trades are not easy to do. So as I said in the last segment, if there's an opportunity, if some good tight end becomes available at a discount, then you can look into making a deal. But the easiest path forward is simply use tight ends less and then try and upgrade the position in the offseason. Next question: can somebody please explain to me why players such as Cowboys linebacker Jalen Smith and Patriots corner Stephon Gilmore would not interest the Jets? Well, Gilmore is pretty much the exact opposite of what the Jets want at the cornerback position. The Jets want young and cheap. Gilmore is old and expensive. And this is a defense that is not really cornerback dependent. I think the way this defense was built, they're not looking for somebody like Stephon Gilmore. They're looking to keep things in front of them, go after the football, prevent big plays. So I think paying a lot of money for Stephon Gilmore to do that would not really fit what the Jets are trying to do. And look, this is a team that's trying to build around young talent. So, I mean, I don't think Stephon Gilmore is a fit for this team at all. And I don't think the Jets are a fit for Stephon Gilmore, to be honest with you. I think there are going to be better opportunities for him. Jalen Smith, I mean, I could see the Jets being interested in him, but I do think people maybe are overrating the impact he brings to the table. He really hasn't been that good since he got his big contract. You know, and I haven't watched him a ton, but all of the feedback I've heard from people who watch Dallas are that he doesn't look that fast, and he's been a liability in coverage. I think one of the things that happens with somebody like Jalen Smith, First of all, he's a guy people know. People remember him all the way back from his college days at Notre Dame, what a prospect he was. Second of all, you look at his resume and you see that he went to a Pro Bowl a couple of years ago and you think, well, this is an impact linebacker. The thing is, if he's being cut, that's kind of a red flag, isn't it? Because if a guy was really that big of an impact linebacker, wouldn't somebody trade for him? That's how I view it. I'm not saying it necessarily be a bad move. I think that there are scenarios where it could make sense for the Jets to bring him in. But I think maybe people are a little bit overstating the impact that Jalen Smith could bring. I think you look at the Pro Bowls and you think about the name, you think, wow, we could add an impact linebacker to put next to CJ Mosley. I'm not sure that's necessarily the case. And our last question, what good options are out there to possibly fill the gap on the right side of the offensive line since Greg Van Roten hasn't done much to instill confidence? I think of all the positions you're looking to upgrade, offensive line might be the most difficult because there are not enough good offensive linemen in this league to go around. I think fixing the offensive line in season is very difficult because if you have a good offensive lineman, you're probably not going to give him up for anything unless it's a ridiculous package. I mean, the Jets are just going to have to deal with the fact right guard's a weakness right now. I don't think putting Dan Feeney into the lineup is going to help anything. I don't think any of the other Jets backups are going to help anything. I think you're just going to have to live with the idea that he's a weakness at right guard. And listen, Greg Van Roten's not playing well, but this is not like Adrian Clark or Wayne Hunter where his play is so bad that he's dragging the entire offense down with him. You know, those were Adrian Clark back in 2007 after the Jets traded Pete Kendall. He was so singularly bad as an offensive lineman that he dragged the Jets offense down. Wayne Hunter in 2011, so singularly bad that he dragged the Jets offense down. Van Roten's not playing well. He's not on that level where the Jets offense has no chance of succeeding because he's so bad. He's just regular bad. Anyway, that's all for our show today. Thank you for listening. This has been the Locked On Jets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. As always, if you enjoy the show, subscribe to it and leave it a good review. I hope you have a great Wednesday, everybody, and we'll be back tomorrow to talk more Jets.